Hi again, Medical Education Podcast listeners. This is Kevin Eva, the editor-in-chief of the journal, coming to you today from what the forecasters tell us might be the last gorgeous day of the summer in Vancouver. So I'm going to make the best of it by speaking with a friend and colleague from the University of Toronto, specifically Ryan Bridges, who's an associate professor in the Department of Medicine at the university and holds professorship in technology-enabled education at St. Michael's Hospital. Ryan and his colleagues have a paper coming out in the December 2020 issue of Medical Education entitled Resident Learning Trajectories in the Workplace, a Self-Regulated Learning Analysis. Ryan, I trust that Toronto is also experiencing some decent summer weather and appreciate you being indoors instead of outside enjoying it.
Yeah, thank you for inviting me to be here. Very excited. And unfortunately, it's just winding down for us as well. And the sun has poked out at the end of the day here, which is great. But we've been experiencing some cool weather lately.
The sun must have known that we were going to record this. It's just coming to celebrate.
Seems like.
you're known very well in this field for your work in self-regulated learning and your thinking around those issues. The additional pieces in this particular paper seem to be looking at trajectories of learning as well as more specifically in the workplace. What are your thoughts or reasons for why you've transitioned out of this simulation lab where you've done a lot of work into this more real world setting?
Yeah, that's. I'm glad you noticed that transition. It's been one that has been a mindful choice for myself. Part of it is associated with my role at St. Michael's Hospital, where in addition to the professorship, I'm co-leading a research group called the Applied Education Research Operatives, and leading that with Stella Ng, who's also at U of T. And our emphasis has been on doing that applied work, trying to understand what's going on in the workplace. And so my transition is to move into that space and to utilize self-regulated learning theories in ways that, on my read of the literature at least, few people have. There is the group Joris Burkhout and his colleagues who have done great work looking at this, but I feel like there are opportunities to expand. And in fact, I found a lot of papers that look at these issues, but don't utilize self-regulated learning theories in the way that I imagine they could and the way that we try to in this particular paper. And so it was an exciting opportunity to branch out for all of those reasons.
Well, and in that transition, you're moving from, again, the simulated environment where we have a lot of control to this more authentic real-world environment. I imagine there's a lot more strategy involved, a lot more deliberateness on the part of the learners in terms of how they're trying to make the best of the time that they have with preceptors or with clinical opportunities. What did you sort of go in anticipating it might be different in this world with respect to the way that self-regulated learning appears?
Yeah, I mean, in the sim lab, as you said, we have control over nearly everything, including the task that we're getting them to focus on and regulate their learning around. Whereas, yes, in the workplace, what we found is and expected is there's so much going on. How do they attune? And you'll notice we use the word attunements and borrow that from several researchers, including Dorothy Evanson. How do they pick up on cues, develop that attunement, kind of develop that fine-tuned understanding of which cues are most important in the sea of cues that are available in the workplace, and really pinpoint those to be their learning objects? And I think that's distinct from, and in addition to everything else that they're doing, the work. So actually working through and getting the job done, while that can be said to be learning as well, I think the purposeful learning rather than the tacit learning is really what we were trying to get at, and that to try to understand that distinction. So for us heading into this, we were really interested in and open to what their ideas were about these cues and how they developed them over time, this attunement process.
Well, and methodologically, you also lose a lot of control in the sense that you presumably can't barge into these clinical settings and you really get in and interrupt people as they are working. How do you navigate that challenge, looking for the cues that you want to identify when you can't necessarily see them in lifetime?
Yeah, and so it was a couple of things that we ch chose to do methodologically. So one, we wanted to pinpoint and focus on a specific goal-directed activity, and one that we imagined most residents would be keen to learn, or at least be well aware of their need to learn from the program's perspective, but perhaps they were directing themselves away. We often joked like sometimes people run two procedures and others run away. So why does that happen? And so we picked bedside invasive procedures for that reason. So we got focused that way, rather than just trying to say how do they self-regulate their learning on rotations. We thought picking that goal-directed activity would allow us to have them focus and recall information more effectively than trying to talk about the broad experience of regulating one's learning. The other choice that we made was to conduct these debriefs. And so this is what we called them. And these were focused on when the residents came off their call shift in the intensive care unit. And during the time that they were often, quite groggy and waiting for the bus or waiting for the streetcar or waiting for, their Uber to come along. They would give the research assistants a call and have a conversation explicitly about what they did overnight relative regarding procedures and any kind of procedure that they were learning and performing during that time. And what's good about the post-call period or that call shift actually is that they are typically more on their own, more unsupervised than typically. So that would allow them to be the frontline person providing the procedure or performing the procedure or being much more close to the operator role. And so we chose that timing. We chose the immediate time after to call them very specifically to try to reconstruct their experiences, where, to your point, we could get in there and just observe directly or felt that that would be not as authentic, allow that to happen and study it after and try to reconstruct from very specific circumstances.
Can you give us a bit more detail then in terms of how you focus that conversation on, again, to use the word you used earlier on the cues that were present? I imagine these participants weren't in the clinic thinking about what cues are leading me to do X, Y, or Z. They're just acting or engaging in the actual workplace. How do you get them focused on the specific things that you wanted to learn from these debriefing conversations?
Yeah, nice point. So we borrowed from the day reconstruction method and tried to get them to rebuild their experience. And then we would prompt and probe quite specifically at the cues. And we had sensitizing concepts in mind, certainly, again, leaning on the self-regulated learning theories that we utilized, in particular, triadic reciprocality, where we're looking at the interactions between their personal attributes and factors, for example, how motivated, how engaged they were in that particular moment, or during that rotation. Their behavioral, so how much did they do, who were they doing it with, and the environmental factors, including their we expanded that to include peers, but thinking broadly about the environment, so that could be colleagues, the setting in which it happened, the type of patient, and so on. So we had them reconstruct and then utilized probes with those sensitizing concepts to get at the cues that they seem to be adopting. And then we tried to ask pretty open questions like, what surprised you about this? And what are you going to carry forward next time? And really trying to get them to think about unique properties of their experience that might open up and provide us insights about what they were attending to and how they were learning around that process.
And can you give us some highlights then in terms of what that process looks like? Very complex with a number of different mechanisms and strategies that people seem to have adopted. But what would you put forward as the key learning point that you didn't necessarily appreciate going into this work?
Yeah, and so I think one thing we didn't definitely anticipate was that the way the residents were going to be thinking about these attunements really represent the lines, the arrows on the triad of reciprocality model. So let me just explain that a little bit to visualize it for folks. Usually it's represented with personal, behavioral, and environmental all being connected by double-ended arrows. And often, how you see many researchers use this model is they talk about and list out the factors. So these were the personal factors they attended to, these were the behavioral ones, and so on. Whereas here, what surprised us and what we feel is an interesting insight that this paper provides is that a lot of the quotes that they provided in terms of how they were interacting with the procedures, and we didn't just use debriefs, we also conducted more in-depth, semi-structured interviews with participants as well outside of their clinical duties. So the culmination of those data really showed us that they were thinking as the double-ended arrows. So they were thinking about those interactions. And they may not think about them explicitly, but they were certainly noting them in their responses to us. So, for example, they may say, you know, I'm not much of a risk taker, and so I tended not to do this. And so here they're relating their personal attributes to their particular behaviors. But then in another rotation, that setting allowed me to do this because this person was there. Well, then now we have an interaction with the environment influencing that previous interaction between their personal and behavioral factors. And so for us, the triad of reciprocality model seems pretty static and not that dynamic. But if you think about the residents operating as those double-ended arrows, a lot of dynamism comes out of what they told us. And so we were quite impressed with and not surprised by, but found that to be pretty an in-depth finding for the work. Absolutely.
Well, and that actually leads me to think about something that you said earlier, which was the notion that, sorry, see, I told you it was always me who messes up. Sorry, Betsy. Where was I going? Touching me 10 seconds. Oh, there's a specific phrase you used earlier that I'm not going to get back in time, so we'll just have to move on. And so one of the things that I think you and others have pointed out in the literature is that self-regulated learning clearly isn't just an individually focused activity. It's dependent on the people and the things around us. That starts to open up some opportunities for the educators in the room to think about how can they better position the learners to regulate their own learning more strategically and more effectively. So moving beyond just the potential for describing what learners are doing, what do you take away from this particular study in terms of how we can help learners to engage effectively in the sorts of strategies that you observed?
Yeah, and so that is the other finding that again wasn't too surprising. So the one critique of the triad of reciprocality model is that it doesn't explicitly integrate the social. And I agree with that. And so rather than throwing it away, I think what we just need to do is expand upon it and include those social co-construction moments. And we did find those in our data. And so yeah, I think the clinician educators and faculty who are supervising residents, it's not surprising to say that they can help with this. Of course, the workplace learning literature has spoken to that very, very effectively through many studies. But I think what we found here is that they themselves can regulate their learning about the particular trainee that they're working with and demonstrate to them the possibilities, these learning trajectories that other residents have demonstrated, and then say, what do you want to do? These are the possibilities. these are the factors that people consider and the interactions that they tend to discuss as they're learning. And so kind of lay it out as a map for residents. And I don't think this needs to be a very onerous conversation. You can talk about these potential trajectories and behaviors that people engage in, the factors that they and interactions that they seem to attend to as they're developing these trajectories, and just ask them, what do you want to do? What are you going to build on in terms of your prior knowledge? What factors do you want to account for in terms of what you want to do in the future? And knowing this program the way you do, and I can talk to you about how I know the program, what do we think is most important for you to learn on this particular rotation, considering the future rotations that you have coming up and those that you've already experienced? And so I think we can make that explicit conversation just part of that, the coaching and mentoring role that many faculty are playing with their trainees, especially in competency-based systems that are making these conversations more explicit. It's just another added component. So it's not just where are you going to get your assessments if we're talking about EPAs or entrustable professional activities, but it's how are you going to work through the processes of learning as well as accomplish those outcomes.
Interesting, and makes me wonder, just as one final question, you mentioned earlier the some learners that run to versus some learners that run from certain opportunities. Do you imagine that conversation you're just describing will play out or need to be handled differently in those two different versions of teacher-student engagement?
I think so, because now you can be quite explicit with trainees to say, do you want to be an interventionalist in this case? But thinking very broadly about, because again, it's not, people aren't just doing procedures, or physicians aren't doing procedures. They're learning a vast amount of information. And so what kind of doctor do you want to be? And I can help you with that. And so not feeling ashamed or vulnerable about wanting to run away from certain experiences, because maybe that's just not the experience for you. And if there aren't explicit assessments associated with that, then that's might be okay. I think, you know, we've talked in other papers about this idea of rather than everyone being competent in everything, like a lot of the competency lists seem to expect, that's just not possible. And so how do we ensure people are exposed to and become facile in critical areas, but in ways that doesn't necessarily require them to feel like they need to be competent or actually reach that high level of competence in all factors? So rather than a core competency, we think about this competent core of individuals, and everyone's working together and collectively. I don't really buy into collective competence per se, but collectively we have different areas that we can all cover off and perform well as a team. And so I think creating that conversation and letting residents know you don't have to be perfect in everything. Here is the different way that we can create a trajectory for you based on your skill set, based on your interest. I think that open conversation will help residents overcome certain feelings of expectation and worry that they have, and that were uncovered somewhat in this paper, because conducting procedures on acutely ill patients is very worrisome for many.
Excellent. Thanks very much. I think you've offered our listeners a lot to think about, and the paper has even more to think about that'll be of great value to anybody who takes the time to pick it up. So just as a reminder to those who want to find it, the article we've been discussing is called Resident Learning Trajectories in the Workplace, a Self-Regulated Learning Analysis. You'll find it under the byline of Ryan Bridges et al., and it's in the December 2020 issue of Medical Education. Thanks once again, Ryan, and I'm sure I speak for everyone when I say that I'm looking forward to seeing where this leads you.
Well, thank you very much, and I'm excited to see what others think.